This is Pete Fornatel back with you on this special holiday edition of Mixed Bag with a special guest. I must tell you that earlier in the year, we played a piece by a singer-songwriter from New Jersey named Mike Agranoff called The Ballad of the Sandman, and it got more reaction for a new or unfamiliar piece that we've used on the show than just about anything else that I can recall in the show's history. And I thought this great performances show would be a perfect opportunity to invite Mike up here and ask him all about it. Mike Agranoff, welcome to Mixed Bag.
Well, I certainly feel welcome. Thank you, Pete.
You must tell me a little bit about the genesis of The Ballad of the Sandman.
Well, The Ballad of the Sandman was, I think, the fourth in a series of recitations that I wrote. Recitation is an art form or performance form that's pretty much gone out of existence these days. It sort of reached its peak in turn of the century, British Music Hall, which is kind of the precursor or predecessor to American vaudeville. And it was poetry spoken, usually telling a story, often funny or satirical, and sometimes kind of melodramatic. And I sort of was introduced to it by a couple of British performers by the name of John Roberts and Tony Barrand. And since I've often, actually I'm not that much of a singer-songwriter, the writing I've done tends to be not up to my own standards, so I generally never sing it in front of human beings, as far as music goes. But the words came out pretty good, so I figured as long as I can write the words, let's try it without the music. And I've achieved some sort of small success in the underground folk world, which I inhabit.
You do performances in clubs and concert halls?
Coffee houses, occasional colleges, festivals, that kind of thing, yeah.
Now, it's not 100% of your life.
It's 100% of my life outside of my work.
Interesting distinction.
Yeah. It's certainly, I love it very much, and I would not want to rely upon it for a living, because I'd get sick of it, I think.
I can understand that and empathize. I'll tell you what, for our listeners who don't know what we're talking about, I'm going to ask you to do a live recitation of The Ballad of the Sandman for us, and then we'll talk some more.
Okay. This is, of course, inspired by people like Pete and others. When the broadcast room's a living tomb of cracked acoustic tiles, and you're left alone with your microphone and your playlist and your dials, and the hands upon the studio clock past midnight and creep towards one, well, it's time to take the air once more, and the graveyard shift's begun. The day shift and the engineers have all left hours ago. You close the heavy soundproof door, set your board aglow. Cue the first two records up, settle in your chair, uncap and snap the transmit switch, and you're on the air. There's magic in the radio. Enchantment in the ether. A power born of mind and brain and yet a part of neither. A power to be reckoned not in kilowatts or joules. A means to let a single voice touch half a million souls. But when you work that graveyard shift from 1 a.m. to 5, you start to doubt that anyone's out there or alive. The halls are lifeless. The phone is dead. And there's nothing quite so lonely as to call with kilowatts and in reply hear silence only. They usually stick the rookie jocks in the lonely graveyard slot, but me? I broadcast nights by choice. I like that shift a lot. Because when I get the lonelies, as I do from time to time, I recall the Sandman's final show of 1969. 1960 radio was awful at its best. I grew up with Cousin Brucey and the Wolfman and the rest, and between the fast talk and the hype and the acne lotion jingle and station breaks with sound effects, they maybe play a single. But that was all there was back then, and that was all we had. And nostalgia finds a way to sift the good from all the bad. And so intertwined was radio with fond scenes of my youth that it's tinted with a rosy glow that overlays the truth. Oh, and summer parties at the beach and every high school date. those midnight drives in my dad's olds and studying till late. They're all movies in my memory. And behind them, I still hear the Beach Boys and the Beatles and the Motown, oh, so clear to the counterpoint of DJ hype and ads for Rheingold beer. But then in 67, FM burst upon the scene. What once played only Bach and Brahms became a rock fan's dream. Between the sparse commercials, they do three songs in a row and album cuts and full-length versions played stereo. And gone was all the mile-a-minute brainless DJ chatter and singing station breaks and other oral fecal matter. Instead, these guys with wit and charm told what they had to tell and spoke as if they thought that I might have some brains as well. I got to know them all by voice that summer. And come fall, I'd hung around the station till I came to know them all. Bill Clancy in the morning slot, Ann Stacy, Charlie West, and the Sandman. He was different and apart from all the rest. Paul Sandman did the overnights. He had a special style. He was older than the others, been around a while. He'd segue different album cuts in a stream of conscious run to theme sets, live concert tapes. Boy, he made listening fun. And though he must have known my name, he always called me Kid. Buddy, let me watch him work, and he'd explain the things he did. And once or twice, he snuck me in the studio late at night and let me cue the tapes and records up to my delight till I wandered back home bleary-eyed as it was getting light. And while the record spun, he sat and talked of days gone by when radio was younger, and so was he, and so was I. While round his lonely Kansas farmhouse, snowdrifts blew and curled, the radio was a living color window on the world. And he said, there was magic in the radio, enchantment in the ether. A power born of mind and brain and yet a part of neither. A way to take you miles and years by means unknown to science. But it's since become a jukebox, nothing more than an appliance. Nah, I could tell you got the itch, kid. You'd like to be a jock? Nah, give it up. The magic's gone. There's nothing left but schlock. You deal with all the crazies and the drugged out suicide calls and the sponsors and the FCC have got you by the throat. And programming tells you what to play and they take no denying. You eat copy advertising crap you'd never think of buying. The hours are long, the pay is squat, vacations are... But then, the cut would end and he'd face the mic and weave magic once again. Yeah. Sure enough, he read me right. I guess he could recognize a little of his own obsession shining from my eyes. And when I left for school that fall in higher education, my first step was to make a beeline for the radio station. Throughout my freshman year, I learned the ropes and paid my dues. I engineered, did commercials, swept, read the news. By the time I was a sophomore, I'd earned a weekly show. I was on the graveyard shift, but I was on the radio. And I learned Paul Sandman was a name that every DJ knew. The Trade Rags did a story. He got a piece in Newsweek, too. And sometimes playing album sides from my deserted station, I'd tune in his show on my headphones just for inspiration. And so it was on New Year's Eve of 1969. School was out. They'd all gone home. The station was all mine. Yep, there was I, the rookie jock, left holding down the fort, well-stocked with day-old pizza pie and coffee by the quart. They had me work a triple shift from 8 p.m. to 8, playing records no one listened to while partying till late. And CBS had hooked lines across the nation to Times Square. And at midnight, we'd switch over to a live broadcast from there to hear the famous ball come down and ring in the new year. By 11:10, it got so dead, you just could not believe. Who the hell's listening to the radio New Year's Eve? So I queued up Tommy, and that would kill a half an hour or so. Kicked off my shoes, plugged in my phones, and tuned in the Sandman's show. Something's different. Something's wrong. I knew right off the bat. He's playing straight top 40. His voice is sounding flat. There's dead air between his cuts, his spots all run too long. Inside of 15 minutes, I knew something there was wrong. I let him start a record and dialed up his private line. He answered with his call letters and I replied with mine. Well, hiya, kid. Hey, tell me, ain't you got a better way to spend your New Year's Eve with some busted down DJ? Well, heck no, I'm on the air myself. I got lots of time, and I listen to your show because it's better far than mine, but tell me, Sandman, what's with you? Is everything all right? Seems to me as if you're somewhat off your stride tonight. Everything is not all right, he answered with a frown. The Arbitron reports came out, and our ratings have gone down, and Harry Stein in programming has determined that the way to get the ratings back on top is dictate what I play. So here I sit with list in hand that says at 10:15 I should play the Righteous Brothers, followed by the Cream, and then a public service spot, and then some Moby Grape. Well, hell, they don't need a DJ. They could put this crap on tape. It's December 31st. The year is coming to an end, and with it ends a decade. And an era, too, my friend. And in 27 minutes, I'll switch off to Times Square. But when I return in 70, you tune in if you care to hear how good the radio could be, if it would dare. He broke off at that moment to queue up another platter, and I said goodbye. The Who were almost finished, for that matter. And exactly 27 minutes later, more or less, on cue, I flipped the switch to hook us in with CBS. And while thousands in New York bade fond farewell to 69 and Guy Lombardo and his orchestra played Auld Lang Syne, I raised my slice of pizza in salute to the new year, and once more to the Sandman at the end of his career. When the network show was over with, I went back on mic. I did some inane comment about the future and the like, did a station break, queued a record up, and then plugged my headphones in and tuned the Sandman in again. Welcome, he began, to 1970 radio. You've noticed in the past a certain blandness to this show? Seems Harry Stein's determined what your music taste should be. Well, you, Mr. Harry Stein. And the FCC. I've had my fill of radio. This here is my final hour, but the door is locked and bolted, and I'm on internal power, and I suppose they'll find a way to get me out eventually. But until then, you'll see how good the radio can be. Oh, and then the music started, and the magic came on strong, and how the sequence brought to light a hidden meaning to each song, and where he got those tapes and records, I'll never know. Old favorites I'd forgotten, live recordings from some show. You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. You can't always get what you want. Where have all the flowers gone? The do run, 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 the do run. The Beatles singing German, Dixieland on 78, Benny Goodman, Walter Carlos, Bessie Smith, the roommates. This is more than playing records. This is genius. This is art. Well, this is something all should hear. Damn, I'll do my part. I opened the equipment cart and stowed beneath the board and rummaged through the junk there till I find a proper cord, patch headphone out to preamp in, adjust the input power, and the Sandman show gets relayed out from our antenna tower. I reach out to the telephone, dial WBVA, and it's answered there by Sharon Smith, their overnight DJ. Hey, Sharon, Paul Sandman's just flipped Harry Stein the bird, and he's putting out the best damn radio you've ever heard. Well, there's a brotherhood amongst the radio voices of the night. They'll stand behind a fellow jock they see he's in a fight. Sharon had listened but a moment, then was gone to find a patch cord of her own to send the Sandman on. And then the phones that long I thought were dead began to light as the calls came in for miles around from listeners in the night. Whence comes this wondrous music, they would ask. And I would smile. And how come I pick it up on every station of the dial? And through the night, the signal spread from station and to station as the DJ set the Sandman and his magic across the nation till Sharon called me, laughing, shouting like she was on fire, saying, listen, someone's put the Sandman on the network wire. That's right. The lines to New York were still hooked nationwide. I flipped the switch to listen in and laughed until I cried. The Sandman must have reached some hero New York engineer who put him on the wire for the whole damn world to hear. There was magic in the air that night. Enchantment in the ether. a power born of craft and pride, and so much more than either. And all across the country sat the overnight hardcore and shared the Sandman's magic till at 20 after 4 he stopped to say goodbye as they were breaking down the door. New Year's Day dawned cold and gray with just a touch of sleet, and many a jock by 9 o'clock found himself on the street. And I came off cheap, a reprimand was all I got, but New Year's night, a new voice broadcast from the Sandman slot. And since that night, the radio's become my occupation. I'm now a big-shot DJ at a major FM station. But when the hours start to drag and the night's going slow, I cue up an album side, crank up my headphone stereo, and tune the Sandman in on National Public Radio. And when the broadcast room's a living tomb of cracked acoustic tiles, and you're left alone with your microphone and your playlist and your dials, though the airwaves seem a graveyard of lifeless white and bone, well, there's always someone listening in. And you're really not alone.
That is a remarkable piece of work, Mike Agronoff.
Thank you.
The first question that comes to mind, or the first assumption that someone would make, is that you had to have had at some point in your life some intimate contact with the inner workings of this business.
Nope.
Yet that is not so.
No. I did some research. I talked to a friend of mine, Bob Sharon. His wife at the time was a DJ in the Atlanta area, rock DJ. Her name was Karen Smith, so she became Karen Sharon. So I put her in the story as Sharon Smith, and she bent my ear for about 45 minutes on the telephone with the woes of being a rock DJ and all the problems associated with it, some of which I won't detail on the air.
Well, she did a great job of it, and you did an incredible job of translating that through your performance art recitation, as you called it earlier. When we played this the last time, the phones went crazy. People want to know if it is available, where they can get hold of it. What can you tell us about that?
It's not available officially yet. I don't have... most of my performance is not this. I'll do one or two of these a night. I usually do guitar stuff and some traditional, some contemporary stuff. And I've got a tape with that on it and two other recitations, earlier ones, that are on it. I'm in the process right now of working up another one which may be on it or not. I still haven't decided. But I guess the only time that I know of that you can hear it is in performance, and I guess the closest thing I've got coming up is Saturday, January the 30th, 31st, something like that. The 30th at the Mine Street Coffee House in New Brunswick, New Jersey.
The text is available, isn't it?
The text is available. That I've written, put a couple of these out in little booklet form, and that's available, and we can get an address later on.
Well, how can people get in touch with you? Let's do that.
Okay, well, I guess write to me, Mike Agronoff, and the address is RD4 Box 45, and the town is Booton, B-O-O-N-T-O-N, New Jersey, 07005.
All right, it's Mike Agronoff, that's A-G-R-A-N-O-F-F.
Mm-hmm.
And the address again?
RD4, Box 45, in Booton, New Jersey, 07005.
Mike, I can't tell you what a pleasure it has been having you as part of our great performances show so close to New Year's Eve. Couldn't have been more perfect.
Thank you.
On your next visit, we'll explore some of the other things you
I'd love to come back.
Continued success, and thanks for joining us on Mixed Bag.
Thank you. Thank you.
that just about does it for this final show of 1987. My thanks to Mike Agrinoff for being our guest. As we said, you can get in touch with Mike about the Ballad of the Sandman at RD4, Box 45, Boonton, New Jersey, 07005. My thanks to John Platt for all of his work on this special year-end program. Mixbag went on the air December 26, 1982. That's 5 years ago yesterday, and we're celebrating with a party on January 17th. We didn't want it to get lost among the holidays, and we also wanted to start the year off right. So January 17th, 88, we will be at the Ritz for our annual show. You can get any information about that event from the organization that it benefits, and that is Folkworks. Their number is 212-807-6896. That's 212-807-6896. This is Pete Fornital. Happy New Year, everybody.
Classics classic. 102.7 WNEW-FM, New York.